Well, we're in this growth series where we're studying some major themes that we see in the book of Proverbs. And, you know, I try to preach different types of series throughout the year, and this is one of those that I wouldn't normally choose to teach on, but this is where God led me, so here we are. So we've been looking at some of the major topics in the book of Proverbs, and one of the biggest topics that we see in the book of Proverbs is this issue of money. So I want to talk about how we can be wise with our money. What can we learn from the book of Proverbs about being wise in our financial area of our life? I mean, in that you have to learn to manage your money or it's going to manage you. And that's not just a biblical concept. That's been proven through scientific study. And one of the more recent studies that's been done on that was published in the Journal of Science. And in their study, they found that if you mismanage your money, you're very likely to mismanage other areas of your life as well. And in the Washington Post, August of 2013, they ran an article about this study, and the article starts out, struggling with finances consumes so much mental energy that people struggling to make ends meet often have little brain power left for anything else. And if you've ever struggled in this area with your finances, you know how much mental energy it consumes. And, you know, when you're struggling with finances, it's just constantly on your mind. You can't go to sleep at night because you're thinking about it. You're tossing and turning. You wake up in the morning, you're exhausted because all you've done was struggle with this topic, your finances. You know, money problems, they haunt us, you know, and like I say, you're just exhausted when you get up in the morning because you're still worrying about your finances. That pressure just is a consuming pressure. You know, it just sucks the energy right out of you. And it leaves you with no brain power no brain power for anything else. And when that happens, you're more susceptible to making more mistakes, making more wrong decisions, just causing the situation to get worse. And the study, it states that those who are struggling with their finances, they're less attentive to other issues, and that leads to all kinds of problems. So you take this study, add it to other studies that we've seen in the past that have been done, and we see that financial struggles are key issues when it comes to divorce, to relationship issues, to health problems, even spiritual problems. So with that in mind, it's important. We just see how important it is for all of us to be wise when it comes to our finances. Because when we're wise with our money, not only does it affect our pocketbook, but also affects our relationships with others, our relationships at home, at work, and even our relationship with God. So digging into the book of Proverbs, you know, this book, it was written by King Solomon. And not only was Solomon the wisest man who's ever lived, but he was also the wealthiest man who has ever lived. And in the book of Proverbs, he talks a lot about money. In fact, Solomon's reputation was so profound that leaders and rulers from all over the world would come and sit at his feet to learn from him, to listen to him. And you can be certain that they were interested in how Solomon became so wealthy, as well as gaining knowledge from him, because as leaders, they wanted to have wealth themselves. So, as we look at this first verse in our notes this morning, I want you to picture yourself there in a group of people, group of leaders from around the world, rulers and leaders from around the world, sitting at Solomon's feet, listening to him teach. And Solomon says, "Greed causes fighting." Now, that may not sound all that profound, but if you really think about it, Solomon, he's saying to these leaders and these rulers, do you want to know why there's war? Do you want to know why there's civil unrest in your own country? Why there's conflict in your own country? It's because greed causes fighting. It causes conflict. Bring that home a little bit. Have you ever had this type of discussion with yourself? You go out, you're shopping, you see something that you like, and you say, you know, I don't have the cash for it, but I could just put it on my credit card. You know, I can make payments on it. Okay, you were conflicted over that purchase. Greed causes fighting. It causes conflict. You know, Solomon, he continues, trusting the Lord leads to prosperity. So in this one verse, we see Solomon laying out the challenge to these rulers and to us. Are you going to trust in God and gain wisdom, or are you going to trust in your money and fall into the trap of greed? You see, allowing the Lord to have control over every area of your life, including money, is the key to gaining wisdom, the key to becoming wise. And in this book of Proverbs, Solomon, he gives us over 100 verses that talk about money. Now, I want to let you know, we're not going to look at all of those verses today, but all of these verses, they can be summarized into five rules for wise money management. Now, these five rules, they may look fairly simple. They are simple, but they're going to require some work on your part to be able to live them out. And then after we look at these rules, I'm going to give you a challenge to live your life financially according to God's plan. You know, I don't want you to end up being one of the statistics that study talks about. So let's look at these five rules about wise money management. Rule number one, keep good records. Okay, this is foundational. Keep good records. This is where you have a basic understanding of where your money is going. You have to pay attention to how you spend your money. You've probably heard somebody say, or you may have even said it yourself, you know, I just don't know where all my money went. Okay? I know some people say, you know, money talks. I disagree. A lot of times it just sneaks off very quietly. You have to pay attention to where it goes. You have to keep good records. You need to know where your money goes. Look at what Solomon says to us here. Know the state of your flocks and put your heart into caring for your herds, for riches don't last forever, and the crown might not be secure for the next generation. Now, when Solomon wrote this thousands and thousands of years ago, anybody who had any money, they had it tied up in agriculture. They owned land and crops, or they had herds of cattle or sheep. But they had their money tied up in that way. But so maybe if Solomon were alive today, instead of telling us to be concerned about our flocks and our herds, he'd say, know the state of your checking account, of your savings account. But the point is, we need to know where we are financially. And it's surprising how many people really don't know where they stand financially. It's not till they go up to the counter and their card gets refused that they realize that they're out of money. And they have no idea where it all went. Okay, this next statement from Solomon, this is something that we must pay attention to this statement. He says, get the truth and don't sell it. Also, get wisdom, discipline, and discernment. So Solomon tells us to get the truth. What is the truth when it comes to your finances? In order to keep good records, we need to know what the truth about our finances are. So let me give you four simple questions to ask yourself to know the truth about your personal financial state. Question one, how much do I owe? O-W-E. I didn't put these in your notes. How much do I owe? You know, you've got to know how much debt that you're in. Not just the monthly payments that you need to make, but what is the total debt that you're in? You need to know that. How much do I owe? Second question, how much do I own? O-W-N. You know, if I were to take everything that I have, my house, my cars, my clothes, if I were to sell everything, how much money would I have? Question three, how much do I earn? Now, not my gross pay, but how much do I bring home every month? You know, it's surprising how many people really don't know, you know, especially today with direct deposit, it's surprising how many people don't know how much money they're actually bringing home. Fourth question, how much do I spend? And this is the answer to where my money goes. What is it that I spend my money on? We need to know the answers to those four questions because these are the facts that we need to know about keeping good records. And we need to know that about our finances. And it's what keeping good records is all about. You know, it could be a simple file or worksheet. You know, we have some resources that would help you. I'll talk a little bit more about them later on. You know, there are even apps that you can find out there that you can put on your phone that will help you track some of your financial stuff. And if you choose to go that route, I want to encourage you, find the app that comes from your bank. But, you know, there's other ways to do that. And probably the biggest pushback I hear when I try to counsel people in this is that I don't have time to do all that. I don't have time to keep good records. Well, if that's the way you're thinking, I want to challenge you, do you have time to worry about your finances? Because if you have time to worry about it, you have time to invest in keeping good records. Just spend some of that time. In fact, if you kept better records, you'd probably have a lot less to worry about. So rule number one is to keep good records. Rule number two, plan my spending. Okay, plan my spending. Instead of wondering where your money went, you need to tell your money where it needs to go. That's planning your spending. You know, set up some financial goals and stick to them. You have to know what you're doing with your money. And part of this is no more impulsive buying, but planned buying, planned spending. And Solomon, he talks a lot about this in Proverbs, but probably the best summary verse for this in Proverbs is chapter 21, verse 5, where he says, "Good planning and hard work lead to prosperity, but hasty shortcuts lead to poverty." So work at planning your spending and avoid the shortcut of impulse spending. I mean that's probably one of the more secure ways to be gaining ground in this in regards to your finances. So you must have a plan. So what is your plan when it comes to your finances? What is your savings plan, your spending plan, your giving plan? What's your plan for your finances? What are your goals? You know, if you're just going along and being carefree about your spending, when something unexpected comes up, when your car breaks down or you have that hospital bill that you need to pay, you're going to wish that you had a plan. You know, good planning and hard work lead to prosperity, but hasty shortcuts lead to poverty. And also, you need to know that financial freedom is never determined by how much you make. It's about how much you spend. You know, it's possible to be wiser with your finances and to lower your stress level when it comes to your finances, regardless of how much money that you bring in, how much money you make. You know, I've had to tell people, or I've had people tell me, you know, if I just made a little bit more money, this would be a whole lot easier. I'd be able to keep good records. I'd be able to get my spending under control if I just made a little bit more. But the truth is, most of us are making more. We're bringing home more than we were when we first started out, say when we were 15 or 16, 17 years old, whatever you had your first job, or maybe just a few years ago. You're bringing home more today than you were then, but you're in worse financial situation now than where you were then. So we have to have a plan, and we need to stick to that plan. You know, when reading through Proverbs over and over again, we see the comparison between those who are wise and those who are foolish. And those who choose to be wise, they usually come out on top of things. But those who choose to be foolish, they lose every time. In fact, somebody said that you could say that how you plan your spending is God's IQ test according to the book of Proverbs. Are you going to be wise or are you going to be foolish? And if you have no plan, you're being foolish and you're never going to get ahead in your finances. You have to have a plan. And you need to trust in God. You need to stick to that plan before you can succeed. You know, this next verse, this is an example of what I'm talking about here. This is Proverbs chapter 21. Solomon tells us, "Fools spend whatever they get." Okay, that's the last part of verse 20, Proverbs 21. Fools spend whatever they get. Why is it that some seemingly smart people, some seemingly intelligent people do foolish things with their money? I'll say it boils down to two words, credit cards. Okay. If you take the easy credit route and add to that unplanned spending, it leads to disaster. You know, studies have shown over and over again that if you go into the store and plan on paying cash instead of using your credit card, you're likely to spend 65% less in that store. just by using cash, by making your mind up before you go in there, I'm going to spend cash on anything that I buy today, you're going to end up spending 65% less than you would using your credit card. You know, it's just too easy to put things on that credit card. So we have to learn to break this impulsive buying habit that every one of us have fallen into at one time or another. And the key is to have a plan. And another word for that plan is budget. And I know that's a bad word for some of you, but that's what we need to do. We need to learn to budget our spending. Because setting up a budget is just telling your money where you want it to go, rather than wondering where it went. And keeping to your budget helps you to avoid being a fool and doing foolish things in this area of your finances. So, and setting up a budget, it's a matter of prayer. God wants to help you do this. He wants to help you in every area of your life. He wants to help you set up a budget. So all you need to do is just go before God and ask for his help. You know, say, God, I thank you for what you've blessed me with. Thank you for giving me the ability to earn this money. Help me to be wise with it. Help me to know where it is it needs to go. Help me to set up this budget. Help me to stick to it. And in that, we have some very simple budget sheets that can help you with this. And if you'd like to have those sheets, just mark on the back of your connection card that in that box it says my next step is to. It says send me the personal finance worksheets. Mark that box when you turn your card in. And please, I'd ask you to put your email on the front to make sure that it's easy for us to get those worksheets to you. But they're very simple worksheets. They're a simple tool that can help you do this. But in that, you need to pray. You need to ask God for his help. Rule number three, save for my future. You know, here in America, we have a real problem when it comes to saving. In fact, our savings problem in America, it's worse than most other areas of the world. For example, in Japan, the average person in Japan saves over 9% of their income. People living in Europe save, on average, 12.5% of their income. But coming here to the United States, here in America, we save right at 5% of our income. And if you break that down by age category, the younger you are, the less likely you are to have any savings at all. So why is this? It's because here in America, we're bombarded with advertising that says, you need this and you need it now. You know, they teach us that we need to live for today. And, you know, that's the attitude of our society. I want it now. It doesn't matter if I can afford it or not because I can always charge it. Okay? That's the kind of the society we live in. But if God's IQ test is how you spend your money, notice what it says in the first part of that verse we just looked at. First part of verse 20, Proverbs 21, Solomon says, the wise have wealth and luxury. So as you planned your spending, part of it needs to be saving for the future. You know, in your planning, you need to have short-term goals and you need to have long-term goals. You know, how am I going to spend my money today and what are my long-term goals? How am I going to provide in the future? And there's absolutely nothing unbiblical about savings. Now, I know I've heard people tell me that I don't need to save because I'm just trusting God to provide for me day to day. Well, I disagree with that. I believe God wants us to save. He encourages that. Look at this next proverb. Wealth from get-rich-quick schemes quickly disappears. Wealth from hard work grows. Underline that last part there. Wealth from hard work grows. What's Solomon talking about? Okay, how does my wealth grow? Well, it's not from spending it as fast as I get it, but it's from saving it. Rule number four, enjoy what I have. I need to learn to enjoy what I already have. And another word for enjoying what I already have is contentment. So this is really the rule of contentment, or being content with what God has already blessed me with. And unfortunately, this rule is being violated all the time. And that's the major reason that we have so much debt in our society, especially credit card debt. Now, I don't want to lead everybody on and tell you that this is one area that I have completely under control in my life, but Teresa and I, we've always tried not to carry credit card debt from month to month. There's been occasional times where we've done that, but that's the exception. We try not to carry any credit card debt at all. Now, how are we able to do that? Well, we do our very best to make sure that we have the cash on hand. We have the money in our account to pay for whatever it is that we're going to go out and buy. You know, look at the vehicles that we're driving. They're not new vehicles, but they're paid for. Again, that's not always been the case, but that's where we are today. You know, would we like to have nicer, newer vehicles? Of course. But right now, we can't afford them. So we drive what we have. God's blessed us with those. And so I know how hard it is to want to have the latest and greatest stuff. And unfortunately, there are more people who give in to that temptation than people who will stand against that temptation. You know, we see something, we think, oh, how nice it would be, and I just need to have that. You know, I need to have that new car. I need to have that bigger home. I need to have the latest and greatest, whatever it is. We want it, and we just feel like we have to have it. But look at Solomon's advice to us. Those who love pleasure become poor. Wine and luxury are not the way to riches. So why do people chase after pleasure and luxury? I mean, if it's proven that it doesn't work, if it's proven that going into debt just leads to more problems, why do people continue to pursue looking for pleasure and luxury? It's because we've bought into this myth that says, if I have more, I'll be happier. I just need a little bit more, then I'll be happy. You know, they think that having more equals happiness. But that's just a lie that our enemy is constantly telling us. You know, if more stuff equaled more happiness, then the happiest people around would be those who have the most stuff, right? But just look around. That's not the case. You know, I know people who seem to be very wealthy. They have lots of money. They have lots of stuff. But they are very miserable people. You know, they have... So more stuff, more money does not equal more happiness. In fact, some people would say that simplicity is the way to happiness. But look at what God tells us in Hebrews 13. He says, stay away from the love of money. Be satisfied with what you have, for God has said, I will never fail you, I will never forsake you. Right here, God is telling us to be satisfied, to be content with what we have. And remember, God would never tell us to do something that he doesn't give us the power, the ability to be able to do. He can help us to be satisfied with whatever it is that we have. So underline that. Be satisfied with what you have. And I'd encourage you, actually, write that out on a small piece of paper and tape that over the chip on your connection, on your credit card, on your connection card. But tape that over the chip on your credit card so that next time you pull out your credit card, you're going to have to stop and have to remove it before you make that purchase. And that's going to make you think. Ask yourself, do I really need to have this? Can I be satisfied with what I already have? Okay, we're looking at 5 rules for wise money management. Keep good records, plan your spending, save for the future, enjoy what I have. And then rule number 5 is give back to God. Give back to God. You know, and this is taught throughout the Bible, but especially here in the book of Proverbs. You know, when you give a portion of your income back to God, what you're doing is you're saying, God, I'm putting you first. I'm trusting in you and not myself and not my money. And I want to say, you know, give back to God. I'm saying that deliberately because God is the one who's enabled you to earn that money or to gain that money that's coming in. So give it back to him. You know, and Solomon, he's teaching us to be wise with our money. And it's really about our relationship with the Lord. You know, it's not about our relationship with money, but about our relationship with the Lord. So to sum up what Solomon says, he says, if you honor the Lord, if you honor him, particularly in this area with your finances, he's going to honor you and he's going to provide everything else that you need. He's going to take care of you, including this area of your finances. And that's what our meditation verse for this week teaches us. So would you read this out loud with me? Ready? Honor the Lord with your wealth and with the best part of everything your land produces. Then he will fill your barns with grain and your vats will overflow with the finest wine. I mean, that verse, it's a great promise. I love that promise. Honor the Lord with your wealth and the best part of everything your land produces. Then he will fill your barns with grain, and your vats will overflow with the finest wine. You know, I hear some people ask, you know, why should I give back to God? And in that, why should I give off of my net, or should I give off of my gross? Well, let me ask you, which one do you want God to bless you on? The net or the gross? Personally, I want God to bless me on the bigger figure. So I want to give to him back off of my gross income. You know, God says that if you'll be generous, he's going to give back, and he's going to take care of everything else. Again, unfortunately, most people don't live that way. You know, when it comes to giving back to God, a lot of people, sometimes they'll just drop $5 in the offering box or the collection plate when we used to pass plates. But, you know, they just drop $5 in. It's kind of like tipping God, hoping for better service. You know, now, I know people get uptight when I start talking about finances, and particularly tithing. You know, when you have to think about your finances, it raises your stress level. I know that. But I don't remember who it was that said it, but they said the most sensitive nerve in the human body is that nerve between your wallet and your heart. But God says, let me show you a better way to live. He wants to help us out. Look at this next verse. It's from Proverbs. It is possible to give freely and to become more wealthy, but those who are stingy will lose everything. You know, probably the number one thing that I hear from people is it's just not possible for me to give back to God. If I start giving back to God, if I start tithing, if I start giving to the church, I'm not going to be able to pay all my payments. I'm not going to have enough money to make ends meet. I want to tell you, there's no better way to get your payments down and to get out of debt than to start giving to God by putting him first in your finances. And the word for that is tithe. When you put God first, when you give back to God, you're tithing. And when you tithe, God can and will bless you financially. Again, Teresa and I, we have always tithed. In fact, I'll go out, and I'm not bragging, but I do want to let you know, we give more than 10% of our income back to God. We're above that 10% level right now. And the only debt that we have is our home. And in that, we're able to make double payments on our home loan right now. You know, we've always tithed, and God has blessed us in so many ways, and today we're in the best financial shape that we've ever been in. We know from experience that it is possible to give freely and to become more wealthy. You know, here's another verse from Proverbs. Blessed are those who are generous because they feed the poor. Again, I know a lot of you in this room that you tithe. You give your full 10% back to God. And I know I could call on any number of you and you wouldn't hesitate to stand up and say the same things that I've been saying. You know this is true. So I want to challenge you to put God to the test in this. If you've not been giving back to God, put him to the test in this and see what he will do for you. You know, to give your full tithe, that would be best, but at least start with something. You know, start with that $5, $10, $50 a week, whatever it is that God lays on your heart, start giving back to him, because that puts you on the road or starts moving you in the right direction. Because the way you're living right now, holding on to all of that, the way you're organizing your finances, you know it's not working, so try something different. Put God first. Be wise and not unwise. In fact, on the back of your connection cards, or I'm sorry, let's go to the back of our notes. Back of our notes. Here's a list of how most people live. And remember, most people, they're in debt. Most people are making bad decisions. They're stressed out over their finances. They're stressed out over health problems or financial problems, even spiritual problems. And it all boils down to their finances. So here's what most people do. Most people earn it, and then they enjoy it. You know, they're spending it as fast as they get it. And then, if they have any left over, then they'll repay it. They're making the minimum payment on their credit cards. Let me tell you, credit card companies aren't stupid. They like taking your money, so they want to keep you, they want to string you along as quick as they can, or as long as they can. Because the longer you're tied to that credit card company, the more money from you they're getting. So they want to keep you around. They like taking your money. Okay, and then after making their minimum payments, if there's anything left, then maybe they'll put some into savings, so they save it. And then again, next step, if they have anything after that, then maybe they'll tithe it. Okay? You know, I thought about putting the word tipping it in there, because that's really what it is. You're giving a tip to God, hoping to get better service. That's not the way it works. We need to put God first in this area. You know, I have to tell you, that way of living is wrong way to live. You know, it just perpetuates the problem that we see in our society today. It doesn't work. You know, people who live that way, they're not getting out of debt. They're not getting ahead. They're stressing out over their finances, and it's causing all sorts of problems in their lives. You know, God doesn't bless that kind of process or that kind of attitude. So what kind of attitude, what kind of process is it that God blesses? Well, God says, earn it. Again, he's given you the ability to earn your money, so earn it. And then, because he's blessed you with whatever it is he's given to you, the first thing you should do is to tithe it, to give back to God, return 10% to him. And when you do that, you're going to discover how much he blesses that other 90%, how far it really goes. And then, number three, save it. You know, when you tithe, God actually allows you to save more. Number four, he blesses you in such a way that you'll be able to repay it. And then number five is enjoy it. So I want to challenge you to choose a new direction here, to live according to God's financial plan. Put God to the test here. I encourage you to do that. I guarantee you won't be disappointed. Put God to the test and see what he will do for you in this area of your life. You know, going back to that study that I mentioned earlier, Washington Post, August 2013, it pointed out that if you're making bad financial decisions, you're more likely to be making bad decisions in other areas of your life. And God's saying, you don't have to live that way. Starting today, you can change all that. Starting today, you can choose to be wiser with your finances. And the book of Proverbs, it's just packed with verses for financial management. But it all starts with putting God first in this area of your life. And whatever area of your life that you put God first in, that's the area he's going to bless you in. So why not put him first in every area of your life? Let's look at this last verse in our notes this morning. It says, it is better to have little with the fear of the Lord than to have great treasure with turmoil. You know, if you were able to be here a couple of weeks ago, you might remember that I said that when you're reading in Proverbs and it says, fear for the Lord, what it's telling us is to take God seriously. So my challenge for you today is to take God seriously. If you're a follower of Jesus Christ, if you call upon him as your Lord and Savior, take him seriously in this area of your finances. Put him first. And if you're here today, you're not yet a follower of Jesus, I encourage you to take him seriously. Give him a chance. Just say in your heart, okay, God, I'm going to take you seriously. I'm going to trust you. I want to put you in first place in my life. I want to put you in first place in every area of my life, even this area of finances. And Lord, I know with your help, I'm going to begin to live my life by putting you first. You know, he's not going to leave it up to you to do it on your own. He'll give you the help if you ask him to. And this is the wisest decision that you could ever make, to put Jesus first in your life. Again, I guarantee that. Let's pray together.